Hey everyone, this is Changing Channels and I'm Larry Walsh. You can't go into a room or get on Zoom without somebody saying artificial intelligence. It is the topic of the year and will be for the next few years. And all these innovative AI applications and use cases is sparking a revolution. Along with all these applications is going to be a refresh of infrastructure and devices. The current infrastructure in the data center, in the networks, and even the stuff on our desktops and in our hands just simply aren't powerful enough for the tools that will be coming to market over the next couple of years. This refresh is going to increase demand for more chips. So this is what Intel is calling the siliconomy. The siliconomy is a way of describing the total addressable market opportunity that's going to be driven by silicon-based products or everything that we own. So, and you can see that it's not just Intel, it's AMD, it's ARM, it's NVIDIA, it's TSMC. So these companies are driving this revolution. There's a huge amount of investment going on to build new manufacturing capacity to meet the anticipated demand for more chips, the chips that go into everything that runs our world. And if you want to really understand how much of an impact semiconductors and processors have on modern life, just look no further and read the book Chip War by Chris Miller. It explains it in great detail. But today we're going to talk about the siliconomy and the siliconomy and how the chips and the semiconductors are going to drive a new wave of innovation, open up new levels of opportunity, and even in many cases, redefine partnerships. And for this conversation, we've brought in, again, siliconomy was coined by Intel. So we asked Trevor Vickers, the Vice President and General Manager of Intel's Global Partners and Support Organization, to come and talk with us about siliconomy and the way semiconductors are again changing the world. I'm Larry Walsh. This is Changing Channels. Let's get into it. Trevor Vicker, welcome to Changing Channels.
Thanks for having me, Larry. Excited to be here.
We're thrilled to have you here. I mean, you're amongst the cool companies again. It's hard for me to actually think about components as being cool, but I mean, it's not a jab or a joke. It's just like it's the stuff that's inside. I think somebody came up with that as a slogan once.
Yeah, it's worked for us.
But Intel and the other chip makers are high on everybody's radar. And you've actually come up with a new term to describe what's going on in the world around us, siliconomy. Can we this is probably a new word for a lot of people. So
Yeah.
can we dive into that and just say what is the siliconomy?
Yeah, I'll credit to Pat for coining the term, but think of it as, at least the way that I think about it, is it's kind of the ubiquity of semiconductors in our digitally connected world. And obviously AI being, which I'm sure we'll talk about extensively, being kind of the latest proof point of really the criticality of driving compute. So, one example would be if you think about it, kind of just how it relates to our everyday lives, our smart cities. We have an obligation to make cities safer, more secure. More people are moving into urban areas. The population in an urban area today, for example, is around 55%, and we actually think that's going to grow by another 13% over the course of the next 30 years or so. I mean, that's a big number, and that's a lot of compute that's going to be required to modernize these cities. Okay, so, and we think it's a big market too. So not only I think is it there a is it the right thing to do for society, but it's also, a $200 billion market growing to $400 billion in the next decade or so. So that's one example, Larry, of where you need connectivity. You need good broadband, you need compute and the infrastructure to manage traffic lights to help with safety. And another kind of corollary to that would be just the explosion of all these connected devices that people are going to have in these cities. We're talking about, devices growing probably by another 200% or so in the next 5 years. So when you combine those two things, you can really kind of see why Pat would use the word siliconomy, because silicon is, and open platforms are kind of at the heart of all of that.
So, and of course, you're talking about Pat Gelsinger, the CEO of Intel. I mean, and a guy who knows his way around the business. I mean, he is one of the legends of the technology business. I appreciate what you're saying here. So, would you say that siliconomy, or what we're steering into, is not necessarily a new type of a new a reordering of economics or of the market, but more of a redefining of what the market opportunity is going to be, or at least expanding on it?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think of it more as the need for compute is insatiable. It's still growing exponentially. If you look at the size of the market, we think it's a $1 trillion, market in the next, few years. And it's at the heart of everything that you do as a consumer, right? You probably have, 10 to 15 devices right in your home right now. Right, that are powered by semiconductors, that are connected to the web, that are constantly, fetching data, uploading data, and we see like our role in that also, as an essential not only supplier of that technology, but if you think about what we're doing from an Intel Foundry perspective, right? There's a need for us to really actually help diversify, where all these semiconductors are getting made and manufactured, right? We can't have them all clustered in one small region in the world. It's imperative that we get more diversity in our supply chain, right? We can't have, some of the incidents like we had the last couple of years where we had industries that were grinding to a halt because a $5 semiconductor brought an automotive lines down. I mean, that is just, it's unacceptable. So it's an area that we're deeply passionate about, that we're investing in, and we think just based on, being one of the sort of the last company standing that's doing a lot of manufacturing in the US, it's our obligation to do that and expand not only in the US, but in other parts of Asia Pacific, and in Europe, so we can diversify where all this is getting built.
And mentioned it in the intro. If you haven't read this book, you have to just turn off the podcast, go to Amazon, and just order it now. But I mean that is one of the key points in Chris Miller's book, Chip Wars, is that there is a huge supply chain risk associated with semiconductors today because of the concentration in Taiwan and South Korea.
And we need to have not only leading edge lithography capabilities, right, that are based in the US and in the Western Hemisphere, but we also need to make sure that as a foundry entrant, right, our ambition is to be the second biggest, right, by the end of this decade. We also want to have the ability to have scale on some of those older nodes as well, right, that are going to be serving a lot of different industry for decades, right? And we can have customers, not only relying on us on the most cutting edge, but also for older technologies, right, that are going to be really important for high volume goods like automotive, right, or factories, or pick your favorite vertical. But it's always going to be a combination, of those two.
One of the things, and I picked up on this vibe in reading Chip Wars. And again, if you never thought you'd be called a book about semiconductors, a page turner, this is a page turner. But one of the things that kind of sparked my interest, it sparked my thinking, was is that there's been Intel, there's been a handful of other chip makers, but now it feels like everybody's becoming their own designer, making that foundry that the foundry business that Intel is developing, the other, the outsourced fabs that are out there in the world that rely on this, is that custom chips feel like this is going to become the next evolution of the technology market as well. We're not just going to be on a x86 architecture. We could be on a number of different custom built semiconductors to drive specific use cases.
Yeah, and that I think that's also one where, there's no other company like Intel that is going to be able to participate in both, right? Of course, it is our objective, right, to build the best technology parts possible, from how we architect and design and put together, right, these Lego blocks to build the best semiconductors, from, the PC, like what we just launched with Core Ultra, which is really kind of our first wave of creating an AI PC, to what we're doing on the edge and to the data center. Like, we have to have that entire portfolio, but we also have to be, we're going to be neutral about also building chips for all of those that are serving those same markets and ultimately competing with us. And that's what it means to be a foundry is, right? We want to attract, the best companies and the best designs, and we're going to have deep relationships with some of our partners. Like think about like the big GSIs, where they're going to help us scale our ability to do more custom design work, through our foundries. So we're going to be in both building the, the best high performing, lowest power chips, but also offering our foundry services to those that are competing, in the same industries and going after the same markets.
I recently had a conversation with the CTO of Worldwide Technologies. And we WWT and a lot of people listening in know WWT is one of the biggest integrators in the business.
Huge partner of ours.
Yeah, they're yeah,
Yeah.
and yeah, they're a great organization. But they're investing $500 million of their own money in the development of AI practices. And for those keeping count, that I'm legally obligated to say, AI five times whenever a microphone's in front of me. But back to WWT, is that they're investing $500 million in their AI development. And one of the things that they were sharing with us is that it's changed the nature of the relationship with like a company like Intel, is that the level of collaboration is getting higher. There's much more. There's much more exchange of ideas, and that exchange of ideas being translated into real products or repeatable practices. Is that what you're when you were just describing about your
Yeah.
relationships with GSIs, is this sort of the same thing that you're seeing, and
Yeah.
has become pervasive, or are we still on the leading edge of partners leaning into this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, no one can go at this alone, right? I mean, you take WWT, a $20 billion company, right? That's got, incredible engineering. What's fortunate for us, right, is this has been a partner for us. They're like a titanium member of our partner alliance program. We've been working with them for decades. And co-engineering solutions. And I think you're right, though, Larry. I think AI puts even a greater emphasis on, hey, we may need to pull together an incredible partner like a WT with a certain ISV, with a GSI, and we're all going to co-solution, write a sale and bring it to our customers, right? Or some, amalgamation of those like partners, right? But the key is you leverage, right, the engineering depth and capabilities of a company like that. We bring the silicon, we're going to bring some open software like a OpenVINO or a OneAPI, and we're going to hopefully be able to co-design, solutions together to meet a targeted, enterprise's need. And so those partnerships, and the ability to kind of manage those partnerships and be able to coordinate and do matchmaking, like they need to come to us and say, or they could come to us and say, we've got a customer we're going after. We can come to them and say, we got a customer we're going after. Okay, what is the outcome that we're driving for? What is that solution, right? Or the problem that we're trying to solve? And we can do it together.
I like that idea. And I think that, again, right now it feels like if you're one of the big GSIs or one of the large integrators like WWT or like a Presidio, that you have the resources for doing this. And it probably scales okay for you now, but how will Intel scale the development of its product roadmap? Or even its capabilities, and still be able to transfer that knowledge and those practices out to more partners as they become more engaged within this economy.
Yeah, that's a great question. So one mechanism we use is our partner alliance program, and I'll give you one example, Larry. Like we just, we fairly recently we launched an AI accelerator, and the whole point of that, right, is to get, companies like ISVs together with us, where we can work on how we optimize their code to run best on, let's say, inferencing on Xeon, right? So harness the ability of you've got a lot of Xeon in your infrastructure; it's ubiquitous. There's a lot of use cases where using what you have is going to be the optimal, solution. So we get them into our accelerator program. There's a value exchange there that's, technical resources, getting your solution in a catalog that then we can advertise and show to other partners and doing matchmaking. There's financial benefits of, market development funds, points. And so when we kind of put all those motions together, marketing assets they can draw upon, accelerated by Intel brand, it can be pretty powerful. And that way gives us scale because we can onboard hundreds, thousands of different accounts into these, So that's one example of how we really want to get to scale, because there's just so much cool stuff going on in this space right now. And there's companies sprouting up all over, with really targeted uses, taking LLMs, complemented with RAG techniques, right? Going after specific enterprise use cases. To me, I don't see this as a one company race or a two or three company race, right? I mean, this needs a broad ecosystem of partners really working together.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I'm really interested in what you're saying about working with the ISVs because, in my perspective, I think the ISVs are the key to the future. Is that the AI will be there and the infrastructure will get rebuilt or expanded based on the AI needs, but it's really the ISVs are going to be delivering those applications. Are the ISVs coming to you or are you reaching out to them? Because it still seems, again, our perspective, and it's been our experience here at Channelnomics, is that ISVs sometimes are sort of like the side children. Like they're there, they're valuable, but they don't get woven into the channel network or the go-to-market motions easily.
I think the way that I look at it is, sometimes that ISV is going to be your closest conduit, right, to the actual end consumer, right, of the product, right? That's ultimately how the experience is going to be realized. So it is paramount that we're working closely together. We're working with, for example, like we've worked with Numenta on an American Airlines AI, project where we're working to help them like tailor certain customer experiences or doing predictive maintenance. And Numenta has done a bunch of great work optimizing all that work on Xeon. So they can actually take our hardware, which American Airlines has, and figure out, right, if they're running inferencing, how can they make it the best TCO story, the lowest power consumption, minimize the amount of, memory footprint they have, right, to help get drive to that TCO. But like that doesn't happen unless we're working with a company like Numenta and we've got a goal working with an end customer like American Airlines that we're trying to solve for, and of course, right, all the big partnerships we have with those big global ISVs, the Red Hats and the IBMs, the world, those are obviously critical as well, as it goes without saying. But there's just so much cool stuff going on, with a lot of companies that are sprouting up. We have to figure out how we can connect with the right ISVs to get to the right outcome or the right solution that we're trying to solve for. So yeah, I'm excited about that. It's an area, for me to learn a lot more as well, as I'm, almost, 50 days kind of into the new role. So it's an exciting area for sure.
Well, beyond ISVs, something you said earlier about building smarter cities, and that got me thinking. Even with your last example, talking about working with an ISV to support American Airlines, do you see or do you are you envisioning that there are going to be new types of partners in your orbit as a result of this build out of more silicon? Because I can imagine that it's not maybe not. Maybe it won't be an integrator. Maybe it will be a construction company that you partner with, or maybe it will be transportation that you're now partnered with. It's not beyond the realm of possibilities that this would actually spring more types of businesses into either the influencing or even the integration and reselling of Intel or other chip makers' products.
I think in many cases, right, we're going to have to get closer to actually who that end consumer of the technology is, because there's going to be such a unique use case, such a unique workload that ultimately we're trying to build a technology solution around to unlock. So, the short answer is I think yes. Of course, as we're thinking about that, though, we need at Intel also need to be thinking about scale, 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 right? Because that's really what, we bring that's a bit unique to the table. And doing that with open standards, right? So we can have a kind of write once, run anywhere, kind of philosophy, right? Which is some of our tools like an OpenVINO or a OneAPI, right? Really help us with that because we want to have tailored individualized solutions as much as we can, but, we got to be realistic about, the number of people
Right.
That we can go and attack individual projects with. So while it's important to do that, like we also got to be thinking scale through our partner programs, scale through having open software, scale through having a familiar hardware set, right? That's spanning, the computer that I'm looking at, right? The edge computes, right? What's going on in the data center or in a big CSP environment? We need to kind of be thinking of both really as we approach the problem statement or the opportunity statement, I should say.
So let's do some of the numbers here, okay? Because this year, AI, which is going to be the driver of a lot of this new activity in your Silicon economy, is going to be about $40 billion, and it's growing at about 55% over year over year. So 2027, IDC pegs the AI market at about 150 billion. Intel, have said that the Silicon economy will probably equate to about $8 trillion. And I always love when anybody uses a T because maybe we just ran out of billions. But there's a big, no matter which way, the rule of law, the law of large numbers still apply. Even if these are only a, even if the reality is only a fraction, it's still going to be a pretty large number. Do we have, as the technology industry, do we have enough partners to address the opportunity? We could talk about we did mention the supply chain issues before, and there have been disruptions in the availability of certain components and certain semiconductors and chips. But is there just enough partners out there today that can do the work that needs to be done over the next 5 and 10 years?
Yeah, and I think we could approach that from two different angles, right? I absolutely think we need more capacity, right? These are, when you're building a generative AI chip, right? It's a big chip. You're not, cranking out, 300 die per wafer, so you need more manufacturing. So you need to make some big, bold investments in these factories, which are going to come online 3, 4 years from now, right? So we have to do that, and we have to do that in a way that also gives us some resiliency, resiliency geopolitically. It could be, climate related. It could be, just about anything, right, that could surface and cause a hotspot. So we have to build that out with our partners at the government level. That's one partner that we didn't talk about. That's going to be really important. And then partnerships with our suppliers, partnership with local kind of municipalities, so we can have the right talent to be in these factories is obviously something that's an ongoing concern and challenge for us to keep addressing. And then I think obviously there's going to be companies that are going to be rising to the challenge of also building different solutions that are just weren't on the horizon, a couple of years ago. So it's probably hard to answer that it's sufficient of what we have today, especially, we can all recognize how the game changed when OpenAI, brought ChatGPT to the table, right? What's going to be the next, innovation along those lines that's going to spur the imagination, of people? So I think we got to keep building these coalitions, if you will, of partners that are going to be bringing these solutions together.
So let's end on this because you're still relatively new in your role, as of, let's just call it in a period of weeks. Probably it sounds like you've been on the job for 7, 8 weeks at this point,
Yep,
roughly.
that's right.
So general manager of global partners and supports, what is your agenda for facilitating this vision going forward? So we bring you back a year from now and we say, look, what is it that you did that actually moved the ball down the field?
Yeah, for me, it's how do we get more partners? How are we working more with partners to develop this ecosystem and doing that like through our partner alliance program? So how can we work with partners that we can do co-engineering? We talk a lot now more about co-solutioning, how you could take Intel IP, NISV's IP, maybe the scale and kind of that last mile expertise of an NSI or a GSI, and ultimately bring those solutions together. And thinking not only the get to market piece of it, like how we actually create the solution, but the go to market, piece of it. So we need to have these marketplaces, right, where it allow us to come together and not only kind of jointly scope out and define what the technology solution is, but what is the business outcome, we're looking for. Maybe we need a different business model. Maybe we need a revenue share versus a one-time, sell a piece of silicon kind of transactional, model. So we got to innovate not only on the technology side, but we got to innovate, I think, on the business, model side, this as well to really make it work. So I think if we just keep leaning into that ethos about, partners are even more critical than what they have been in the past, and we think of partners as necessary to actually build the kind of solutions that we want, not just, discrete pieces of, silicon, then we're gonna do a good job collectively. But that's, to me, kind of the mindset that we need to have.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to be looking forward to seeing more of what comes out of Intel and out of your organization. Trevor Vickers, thank you for joining us here on Changing Channels.
Thank you, Larry, for having me. Appreciate it.
That's about all the time we have for this episode of Changing Channels. Again, I want to thank Trevor Vickers, the Vice President and General Manager of Intel's Global Partners and Support Organization, for joining us today. And I also want to thank all of you for tuning in. If you like what we're doing here, Changing Channels, hit like, subscribe, share with your friends, and check out all the great content we have on geonomics.com for you. We exist to help explain what's happening in the market. Until next time, I'm Larry Walsh.